I'm the dude. So that's what you call me.
Are you a virgin?
Yeah, not since I was 10.
Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret.
Come out to the coast. We get together, have a few laughs.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Can I return it if it doesn't fit?
It always fits. Eventually.
Welcome back to Movie Mingle. I'm Caveman.
And I'm Maggie.
And today we're on episode 54, and we're doing Baby Driver.
Baby's going driving. Baby's vroom, vroom. Driving everywhere. Vroom, vroom. Baby's vroom. Driving. It's about a baby, vroom. And he drives.
Vroom.
That could have been in the movie.
It could have.
Yeah, that little ditty song.
It should have been. This movie came out in 2017, directed by Edgar Wright. If you're unfamiliar with Edgar Wright's work, he's the director of Scott Pilgrim vs. the World.
Mm-hmm.
Most recently, he did Last Night in Soho.
Which I never saw.
You did not. No. I did.
And?
I fell asleep.
Yeah, I love Matt Smith so much, and I enjoy Edgar Wright a lot, but it just didn't look that good.
There are people that have told me that they like it, and I want to give it a second chance when I'm not so tired, but it wasn't really keeping my interest at the same time.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't mind giving it a second shot. But I think what Maggie and I know him most for,
yes,
is the Three Flavors Cornetto trilogy.
Yes. Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and End of the World?
World's End.
World's End. To be fair, I've only seen At World's End once.
I've only seen World's End once as well.
I didn't really thoroughly enjoy it.
It's a fine movie.
It wasn't.
I need to give it. That's another movie I'd like to give it another chance.
The thing about it is that I adore Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, who are frequent collaborators with Edgar Wright. I absolutely adore those three. They did a really great little TV show called Spaced, which is only like 12 episodes, and they're 12 perfect episodes. There's one joke in one of the episodes about an Eskimo role. Nick Frost is like a Boy Scout leader, and he had a hard time doing the Eskimo rolls, which I think is something you do with a cat in a canoe. I'm not quite sure. And Simon Pegg says, "It sounds like you rolled right Inuit." And I still sometimes think, wow, of that and laugh. Like, I'll just be at work and I'll be like, rolled Inuit. I think it's funny. Space is a great little show.
It is.
Very 90s. It's very, it's very quaint.
1999 to 2001.
Yeah, it's just so small.
If you like Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
Yeah, it's
and
definitely worth
that kind
watch.
Of humor, mm-hmm, that Edgar Wright usually brings to the table, then give it a shot.
He definitely does his best work with those two. I enjoy Shaun of the Dead, but at a certain point, that movie does become a zombie movie, and movies terrify me. Mm-hmm. So the last like 20 minutes of that film can be really hard for me to watch. But again, that scene where Simon Pegg's like, there's nothing of the man you love left in the car, and then a zombified stepfather turns the music down. God damn it. So funny. But for me, Hot Fuzz is top 10, one of my favorite movies of all time. Probably my favorite action film of all time. There is never a moment when I don't want to watch Hot Fuzz.
It's true.
Hot Fuzz is a great movie.
It often comes up when I'm like, what do you want to watch?
And I'll be like, Hot Fuzz?
Hot Fuzz?
Here come the fuzz. I love that film with all of my heart. And so like, I'll just walk around work and be like, crusty jugglers.
The crusty jugglers.
And of course, you know, the greater good.
There's so many great lines from Hot Fuzz.
And I feel like everybody kind of focuses on Shaun of the Dead.
Murder.
He said anything about murder. I can't hear the word murder without doing that. Like, that movie is Hot Fuzz for me is a 5 out of 5 perfect film.
Maggie, have you ever shot your gun in the air while yelling ah?
No, I've not shot my gun in the air whilst yelling ah. Fucking love that movie. I love that movie. It is my favorite thing that those three men together have ever done. And then everything else that Edgar Wright has done is there. You know, it's not. There's a whole. Wait, no, he's doing A Running Man with Glenn Powell. That will be interesting.
I mean, everything he does is interesting.
It is. Like, it's not bad,
nothing,
per se.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say that Last Night in Soho was bad.
No.
I'm not going to say that Baby Driver's bad.
Well, I'm going to say that. But spoilers, I don't like this film.
Because it's bad or you just don't like it?
I don't like it.
But it be, okay.
But not necessarily because it's bad, because it's not my cup of tea. And we can get into it. And it.
You mean Inuit?
Oh. This is why I've married you. I love you so much.
Well, before
God, I want to come across this table right now and have my way with you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hold on, everybody. Yeah. We'll be right back.
Anyways, no, we'll get into it, but I am not a big fan of this film, and it was reiterated to me watching it again. And it's not just because of the cast, but it has a lot to do with the cast. So.
It's not the movie's fault. Edgar Wright wrote Baby Driver as well. He writes most of his films. He also wrote a couple other films that he didn't direct, like Steven Spielberg's The Adventures of Tintin. And he wrote the original story to the Ant-Man movie.
Which I wanted to see.
I wanted to see his, yeah, directed.
I remember when it came out that he was going to do it, and yep. I was so excited. And then when it came out that he wasn't going to do it, and it was like,
oh. And because he didn't do it, he did Baby Driver.
There's a multiverse out there that is connected to the MCU that where we got to see Edgar Wright's Ant-Man. And I mean, we got to see bits and pieces of it because there were bits and pieces.
They kept
specifically
some parts.
The scene where he was like in the helicopter and the iPod turns on, and
there's that. Yeah. There's him running on the gun.
Yeah,
it was also an original idea from Edgar Wright.
I would have loved to have read that script, but there's a multiverse out there where somebody, you know, where that movie was made, and it was great or terrible. It's hard to say, but I would like to see that film. But alas, we got the Ant-Man that we got, and I'm okay with it.
Music was done by Stephen Price.
There was music in that movie that wasn't.
Some music in there that was not.
Couldn't have told it. That wasn't fucking the soundtrack.
Yeah, there's some like action moment where there wasn't a needle drop. And I even remember noting it that I was like, oh, there's actually some music in here, not just like what Tarantino does.
Yeah.
And just fill the movie with soundtrack. Stephen Price has also worked on Attack the Block, which is a great movie with...
that is a really good film, John Boyega.
John Boyega, yeah.
Yeah, that really was good movie. That was a movie that everybody was like, you need to watch this. And I was like, alien horror film? No, but it's a legitimately good film.
The World's End, he did the music for.
Okay.
Gravity. Fury, the Brad Pitt...
Nazi killing
John
movie.
John Bernthal, Michael Peña, and Shia LaBeouf movie where...
They killed Nazis.
They killed Nazis in a tank.
I mean, Brad Pitt loves killing Nazis.
Tank shooting Nazis.
Oh, man. Let's get some of those.
Tank
going
exploding
right now.
Nazis.
Yeah, no, I'm down.
Cinematography by Bill Pope. He also worked on Army of Darkness, Clueless, which I love how the guy who did Army of Darkness also did Clueless.
Yeah.
But he also did the Matrix trilogy.
Oh.
Bedazzled.
Oh.
With Brendan Fraser.
Yeah.
Spider-Man 2 and 3, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World,
uh-huh.
Men in Black 3,
okay.
John Favreau's Jungle Book, which is the better of the Jungle Books.
Well, of the remakes.
Of the remakes, yes.
Yeah.
I think it's even better than the other live action that came out in the 80s, 90s. There was a live action Jungle Book.
That one. Yeah. It's pretty solid. But it's because it's a shot-for-shot remake, and it's...
It's not a shot-for-shot remake.
Wasn't it?
No.
I don't know. I saw it once. It was fine. The Jungle Book is not my favorite Disney film.
The one that was...
The one with Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, the one that...
The Andy Serkis.
Andy Serkis directed.
Like the darker, more like realistic darker,
but
Jungle Book.
One that the CG was terrible.
We don't need darker, realistic versions of childhood stories, guys. We ran into this with A Christmas Carol. We don't need it. Like, I don't want a darker, realistic version of Tarzan. Just give me fucking Tarzan.
No, everything has to be grounded in dark.
Producer Robin is slamming himself against our window, so if you hear anything in the background.
I thought a bird hit our window.
No.
No, just the cat.
Just the cat.
Producer Robin just adding those flares of what he thinks is art. He also did Alita Battle Angel.
Oh,
which,
boy.
Woof.
Yikes.
Elizabeth Banks' Charlie's Angels with Kristen Stewart.
Yikes.
Shang-Chi, which had some
Yeah, Shang-Chi is a legit film. Yeah. I do love that film. I don't know it for its cinematography, but I guess it does have some really neat shots. So
he also worked on the cinematography for Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, and Jerry Seinfeld's Unfrosted.
Yeah.
So, you know, highs and lows.
Yes, highs and lows.
Baby Driver has a 92% from critics and an 86% from audiences, which I completely understand.
And I respect but don't agree with. I can see...
The critics or the audience? Both.
I can see why people liked this movie. This movie was very of its time, right? This is a very 2017 movie. The cast, the music, all of it. You know, it's Edgar Wright. Edgar Wrighted all fucking over this movie. This movie is so Edgar Wright that it's all over your fake neck and chest. Like, it
That's
is
why I like it.
It is just Edgar Wright just fucking shoving himself right down your goddamn throat. I think it was a little too much, honestly. I was bored watching this film.
Bored.
I did not go into it wanting to watch it, first and foremost, because there are two people in this cast that I vehemently do not like. And I also...
All right, who are they? What they do?
Fucking Ansel Elgort and Kevin Spacey, and we all know what they've done. They have done really bad things with underage people. Excuse me, they've allegedly done very bad things with underage people. You know, and Kevin Spacey has technically, legally not been... I was doing the research after our 7 episode. You know, Kevin Spacey, all the allegations against him have either been dropped in court and or dropped due to death, refusal to testify, and the statute of limitations. But there's enough smoke there to make me think that there's a fire, so don't like him. And Ansel Elgort apparently really liked, you know, 15 to 17-year-olds when he was in his early to mid-20s. And allegedly, and while nothing has been certified in court, it's enough to make my distaste for him grow. And it's not like, I mean, with Kevin Spacey, I enjoyed him up until the allegations, and then I was like, ew, gross. You know, because you hear that shit and kind of can't come back from it. With Ansel Elgort, I never really liked him, per se, because, like, he's so bad in this film. He is literally a cardboard cutout that they move from scene to scene. You can see Edgar Wright's hands moving Ansel Elgort from scene to scene in this movie when he's not driving. Him and Lily James have no chemistry. So I don't enjoy him in general.
Actually very true.
As an actor, like, I think that he is not a great actor. And so the allegations just made me go, no, all right, I'm done with this dude. I couldn't even watch West Side Story. Like, I got about halfway through and I was so fucking bored, I turned it off. Like, that should have been a slam dunk for Spielberg, and it was bad, dude. It was bad.
Yeah, and that wasn't because of the actors in it.
Well, a little, but also just because it was bad in general. So, yeah, you know, here are two people that I don't like. So I didn't go into this movie wanting to watch it in the first place. But I was like, all right, open mind, I guess. We'll give it a shot. And I just didn't really enjoy it. I was thinking about it today in preparation for the podcast, what I would say. I don't enjoy stories where it's like a mob story where somebody is almost out, but they've just got to do that one last job and it pulls them back in. Like, I'm so over that cliche. And while there are things about this movie that I do enjoy, it's not a lot. So ultimately, and I kind of felt this way too the first time that I watched it, I was like, all right, like, it's mid-level for Edgar Wright. And since then, because this is literally only the second time I've seen it, I have still gone into it just a, yeah, no, it's not. I just don't like it. I don't enjoy this film. Again, there are things that I do enjoy, let me put it that way, but there's more that I don't enjoy. And, like, I don't even really like the music choices.
Aww.
Yeah, I, like, there are so many of the songs I was just like, meh. But that also could just be my bias of in general.
Baby Driver was made for $34 million, which is a...
wonder how much of that was the music budget.
Pretty small. I mean, I guess all you're doing really is, like, some really simple scenery. Like, there's not, like, there's no elaborate sets.
There's no elaborate sets.
It's all stunt driving.
It's all stunts,
and then
soundtrack, and actors' cost. And a lot of those stunts were practical, too. There's... very little, like, CG added.
No, there's. I watched a few behind-the-scenes things with some of the car driving. A lot of it was done in camera, stunt driving. Ansel Elgort did do a lot of the stunt driving himself as well. Not everything, because no matter how much he put, how many hours he put in before doing it, he's not going to become a great stunt driver for a movie compared to what stunt drivers can actually do. But there's a lot of stuff that he did do, and he was able to accomplish a lot of stunt driving on his own in a lot of behind the scenes stuff that I watched, which was impressive just for any actor to do a good job. Stunt driving is just entertaining. It did make $108 million domestically.
Yeah, it was a fairly decent sized hit.
$120 internationally, and an extra $17 million on home media, for a grand total of $245 million.
You know, almost a quarter of $1 billion for Edgar Wright. Good for him.
Yeah, good for him.
I'm not saying like, I wish this movie didn't exist. I'm just saying like, I don't enjoy it. So, you know, good for Edgar Wright. He got to go off and do, you know, he's kind of one of those directors these days that I don't feel has to do the studio films. He can do what he wants. You know, he has carved out his own sort of niche grouping. I just don't feel like anything he's done without Simon Pegg and Nick Frost has necessarily been that great.
The only exception, I think, would be Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
I haven't seen Scott Pilgrim in a very long time. I remember enjoying it deeply. I've seen bits and pieces of it, and I'm always happy to, like, if I'm on, like, TikTok or something and a clip of Scott Pilgrim comes along,
it's fun and whimsical and silly and, you know, very video gamey.
I didn't watch the Netflix cartoon that came out not too long
ago. I watched the first two episodes. They started off being very similar to the movie.
And then they, like, changed
it. And then they changed the stuff, which is fine.
Which is fine.
And it's all based off of a comic book. Yeah.
But, you know, like, Scott Pilgrim, it's not my favorite film, but it's a fun one.
It never has to be your favorite film.
I look forward to revisiting it, but...
Actually, we will be, because it's on the list.
It's on the list, yeah, so look out for that sometime in the near future.
Baby Driver won 43 awards and was nominated for 3 Oscars. Film editing and sound mixing and editing. It lost all 3 to Dunkirk, which... Of course it did.
Of course it did. And Dunkirk wasn't even Nolan's most like acclaimed film either.
No, it wasn't. But I mean, almost everything Nolan does.
Yeah, it's going to get something.
Something. At least one or two awards.
Look, Edgar Wright can edit the fuck out of a film, and that is very, you know, very aware. Edgar Wright can edit the fuck out of a movie. That is very clear. And, you know, he will one day get his gold. But I know he got a BAFTA for it, I think. You know, yeah, like, fucking Christopher Nolan's going to get that, though, over everybody all the time. It's just, this is the way that it is. It's for the greater good.
The other editing nominees were I, Tonya, The Shape of Water, and 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
I think the other... 3 Billboards is the only one I haven't seen of that. No, I haven't seen Dunkirk either, actually.
The other films nominated for sound mixing and editing were Blade Runner 2049, The Shape of Water, and Star Wars The Last Jedi.
I mean, look, I have a lot of issues with The Last Jedi, but the sound when fucking Laura Dern goes to hyperspace and...
Or the lack of sound.
Or the lack of sound, yeah, and she cuts through that ship's pretty fucking legit.
That would be sound editing.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, that'd be editing.
Yeah, but still.
And then the sound after would be sound mixing.
Yeah. Either way, fucking gorgeous, that moment. It took my breath away.
So, Maggie, you want to get into the cast?
Yeah, let's dive into this cast.
Let's start with John Bernthal.
Yes, John Bernthal is in it for about 4 seconds.
Yeah.
But
I kind of wish he came back towards the end.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that he says, if you don't see me again, I'm probably dead. So, chances are that John Bernthal
ate it.
Yep. I do thoroughly enjoy seeing John Bernthal in things. I know that he's in the new The Accountant 2, which somehow The Accountant with Affleck was a movie that did really well.
It did.
And I vaguely remember watching half of it with you and being like, all right, I kind of see why. Like, it's a, you know, it's a sort of like spy thriller. It was weirdly entertaining in the way that you're just like, I can shut off my brain and watch this for 2 hours. But my problem is that there is no way on God's green earth, even with different parents, that Ben Affleck and John Barenthal can play brothers. Like, I just don't, I don't buy it. I will not buy that at the store. I don't care how cheap it is. But, you know, I do love him as the Punisher.
He's and great as the Punisher. Yeah,
I did not watch The Walking Dead for so many reasons.
He was great as Shane in The Walking Dead.
I was going to say, while I was watching this film, I was like, God, I really want John Barenthal to do, like, a love story or, like, a rom-com or something. Because I always want to see people step out of that. He was very recently in a movie called Origin, directed by Ava DuVernay. And it was a sort of a tragic romance. And he plays, like, the tragic romantic husband. And I didn't see the film myself. I for no other reason than just kind of lack of time. Although it is on Hulu, so I might give it a shot. He does play, like, the doting, lovely husband in it. And I'm like, you know what? Yeah, like, let's get more of that in with John Barenthal. Because otherwise, all of his shit is just guns and shooting and killing and...
Which he does a great job of.
Yeah, he does a great job of it. But, like, I kind of... I want to see Christoph Waltz and, like, Giancarlo Esposito. I want to see a different... I want to see more range. Like, just because, yeah, he can punch and shoot people really well, and he looks very hot doing it, maybe I want to see more than that, you know?
Next, we got John Hamm and John Hamm's John Hamm.
John Hamm's John Hamm. The ham you can eat in the bathroom. Let's face it. We live in a fast-paced world, but if you're as busy as I am, every day you have to make a decision. Am I going to eat lunch, or am I going to go to the bathroom? Well, now you never have to make that choice again.
Thank you for bringing up John Hamm's John Hamm, because John Hamm's John Hamm is one of my favorite things that man has ever done.
It is. Like, people know him for Mad Men. They know him from, like, The Town and...
Top Gun, Maverick, fucking, you know, Bridesmaids... We know him from a lot of things, but John Hamm's John Hamm.
It's an SNL skit. Look it up.
It's great.
Just, we're not even going to say anything. Just
look it up.
Go to YouTube, just type in John Hamm's John
Hamm. Also, check out SNL's Hamm and Bubbly. That is another one of my favorite John Hamm skits. He is an incredible actor as in both drama and comedy. The man is got such great comic timing. We just watched him on 30 Rock where he played Liz Lemon's stupid boyfriend.
Yeah. He's so handsome, but so stupid.
So handsome and so stupid. He had a great run in Good Omens.
He was in the one and only Christmas special for Black Mirror.
Yes, he was. He
did a great job in that.
He was delightful and kind of almost unrecognizable in The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. The man... he's such a delight. I am never unhappy to see John Hamm pop up in anything. In fact, he is one of my favorite parts about this movie because of all of the bad characters. So basically everybody but Lily James, he's the one that I like the most. And I remember both the first time I watched it and now being like, oh, he's the final boss. Like, not realizing that, like, ultimately he's the final boss.
He is. Yeah. You're
like, oh, Kevin Spacey, oh, maybe
Jamie Foxx, or John Barenthal comes back. And somebody, one of them.
Because all of those people are so antagonistic against Baby.
Right.
But it turns out that it was John Hamm, just sad and angry that his wife got killed, was the ultimate.
Which is upsetting if your wife gets killed.
I would hope you would go on a killing rampage if I died.
I mean, if it happened that way, I would probably be pretty angry.
Yeah.
Let's not forget, too, that John Hamm played the AI toilet in Bob's Burgers. It was a great role.
That is a really great episode.
And I'm not kidding, either.
I forgot about that
episode. I'm serious when I say that was a great role for him.
That who else could have been an AI, a fancy Japanese toilet that Gene saves?
Please sit to create profile. Please log in with name now.
Gene?
Hello, Gene. Please sit to create profile.
See, the man does not take himself too seriously.
That man also has That man has range because he can be super dramatic like he was in Mad Men, and he can be super goofy like playing a toilet or the John Hamm's John Hamm on the SNL skit.
Or just, you know, his character in 30 Rock. Stupid. And the great thing, too, is that they lean into how dumb he is, and John Hamm goes for it full ham, literally.
See what you did there?
And, like, he does cameos and stuff. We haven't gotten to the episode yet, but there's an episode called Anna Shaw Day, I think. It's one of the Valentine's Day episodes, where Liz Lemon goes to get a root canal or get her teeth done on Valentine's Day, and she has nobody to pick her up. And she has this dream sequence where three of her ex-boyfriends, fucking Dennis Duffy, Floyd, played by Sudeikis, and John Hamm, are all playing Jamaican nurses at the doctor's office. And it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. Like, I love that goofy son of a bitch. And apparently he's in that new show Landman, which is about oil or something, and Billy Bob Thornton's in it, but I've heard good things. I know he was in a season of Fargo, which I haven't watched any of them, but, you know, again, I've heard good things.
Eliza Gonzalez plays John Hamm's wife, Darling.
Yes, and she looked very familiar to me, and I've pulled up her films, and there's not a lot of her films that I've seen.
I've seen this and that and the other thing.
Yeah, like, there's been a few things, like, I've seen Hobbs and Shaw. I didn't see Godzilla versus Kong.
I did, but I don't remember her character.
But yeah, like, I don't remember her in the stuff that I have seen.
I saw Bloodshot, and I don't remember her.
Alita Battle Angel.
I saw Ambulance, and I don't remember her.
Yeah. She's very pretty, but I think the reason why I think that I know her is because she's like a carbon copy of Ana de Armas. She's literally like Ana de Armas light. And that's not
a bad thing, you know, per se.
She's a beautiful woman.
I have her filmography open on IMDb, and directly to the right of that is Top 100 Stars of 2020.
Yeah.
The thumbnail is Ana de Armas. on Eliza Gonzalez's page.
Yeah. Funny. I mean, bless her sweet soul. I enjoyed her thoroughly. Her and John Hamm had such great chemistry in this movie. So much more chemistry than the two main actors. But I, you know, I just don't really know her from a lot of stuff. So I wish her all the respect and love in the world. But, you know, she hasn't made much of a splash for me. Although, seriously pretty.
Speaking of seriously pretty, Lily James plays Deborah.
Deborah, yes. She is a stunning British actress. She's been in a lot of good things. She was also, unfortunately, in Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, which is one of the worst goddamn movies I've ever seen in my life.
You read the book, didn't you?
No.
No?
No, I was really into Abraham Lincoln Vampire
Hunter. That's right. Abraham Lincoln. That's the one you
But like. I couldn't get into Pride and Prejudice and Zombies because I don't like zombies. I don't do zombie fist stuff. I don't like it. Going through her list, she was lovely in Cinderella. I only ever saw it
once. I was going to say, I still have not watched Cinderella.
We should watch it. It's very good. Cate Blanchett fucking destroys that movie, but of course she does. She's incredible. But, you know, she does a good job as Cinderella. Pam and Tommy was phenomenal.
By far the best thing she's done.
Absolutely.
I haven't watched all her Sebastian Stan's ever done. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
People, listen.
Yeah.
Go to Hulu.
Yes.
Type in Pam and Tommy.
And just let it happen.
And just watch. It's 8 episodes. It is surprisingly good.
Yes.
And Sebastian Stan does such a great job playing Tommy Lee.
Great job.
And Lily James does an amazing,
transformative job.
She is Pam Anderson. Yeah.
Growing up, I knew about all the Pam and Tommy stuff because, you know, as a kid in the 90s, and how do you escape that pop culture? It was a giant thing. But, like, watching it as an adult, you're just like, this poor fucking woman. The coals that she was raked through for nothing, for just living her life.
Yeah.
And then having a personal item stolen
from her.
She was
a porn star in the 90s, and
she wasn't. Well, it's because of that.
She became a porn star in the 90s.
Yeah, but it was against her will.
It was something that it wasn't what she wanted to do. She wanted to be an actress.
Yeah.
A model.
But just because she was in Playboy doesn't mean that she deserved.
Oh, no, I know. She didn't deserve anything that happened to her. She did nothing wrong.
Absolutely nothing wrong.
It's just people.
Yeah. We're awful to her. And then, like,
and Tommy Lee was kind of terrible to her. Yeah, he was terrible to her.
But, like, I mean, she had something private stolen from her and released on the internet, released to the world, and we blamed her for it.
Right, we did. Yeah.
We blamed her for
it. And they didn't even...
And it destroyed her life. Pamela Anderson deserved better, and I did thoroughly enjoy The Last Showgirl. That was a weird, beautiful film.
Pamela Anderson, nominated for multiple acting awards, didn't win any of them, but the fact that I was like, wait a minute, Pamela Anderson was nominated for an Oscar, or not an Oscar.
A Golden Globe.
Golden Globe. Yeah. And we watched it, and I thought she did a great job.
Yeah. It's an interesting film. I did not buy a few things in that movie, but it was a very interesting, but a very good film. Back to Lily James. She was also in the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society, which is a ridiculous fucking name for a movie, although it is the name of the book it was based on. And it was a post-World War II love story, and it's legitimately pretty sweet. And I enjoyed that film a lot. Glenn Powell was in it, being very cute. I never saw The Iron Claw.
Iron Claw is fantastic. I can't remember if Lily James was one of the
wives
or somebody else.
I've only seen it once. I want to see that movie. I think
you'd like it, Maggie. It's a really well done movie. Zac Efron is.
Yeah, I've heard such good things.
Is amazing. His acting and the. I mean, he's always been kind of built and cut like the guy. Mm-hmm. Has always just kept, ever since after High School Musical, I feel like the guy just hit the gym and never stopped. And he definitely didn't stop for this movie. He is massive.
No, I definitely would like to see it for sure. But Lily James is lovely. She's fine. I sort of nothing her. I mean, she's there.
I'd love to see her in more stuff. Yeah. She doesn't come
some
up
good,
a lot.
Bad,
yeah,
no.
She comes in.
And she's good and bad. Decent in this film. But
she's decent. I don't think she gets a lot to do.
No, she gets absolutely very little to do other than to just be sweet and doe-eyed. She is way too much of an open book. I mean, she is just instant. Like, they try to force
how many servers do you know would just say, talk that much about themselves?
That was me, but I'm a chronic oversharer. And one chronic oversharer has got to recognize another. And fucking Deborah and Baby Driver is a chronic oversharer. They tried to force the chemistry between her and Ansel Elgort so hard, and it's not there. It's not there. Like, she's these pretty eyes and this big smile. She's too old for him? Oh, that took me longer than it should have. Damn, caveman. Damn.
That's why they had no chemistry.
That is true. She was above age.
Allegedly.
So a couple of people in the cast that I feel worth mentioning. One of them, of course, is Jamie Foxx, who plays the character Bats. In the Django Unchained episode, I talked about how there are times when I don't like Jamie Foxx because he's being a little bit too Jamie Foxx. And this movie is one of them. This movie, all I could think is just like, this is just Jamie Foxx, just fucking Jamie Foxxing it. Like, he didn't disappear into the role. I didn't, you know, I just felt like I was watching Jamie Foxx act. And I didn't like that at all. Like, he was just a little bit too over the edge and too insane and too much of him. And I just was like, all right, okay.
It was a lot.
He was a lot in this movie.
Like, I don't. Yeah.
He chews the scenery, but it's a lot of gristle.
There's a lot of gristle in that.
Yeah. He's a large part of it, but he's not a part of it that I've in any way sort of enjoyed. And, you know, we've already talked about our favorite Jamie Foxx stuff and all the things that he's done. I think I sent you on Instagram a video of him on In Living Color. Dressed up in drag for a dating game.
Oh, I haven't watched it. It's really
funny because the other people, the other, you know, actors on set didn't know what he looked like during the skit. So their reactions to seeing him in drag for the first time are all genuine. And they're hysterical. Jamie Foxx is standing there with Jim Carrey. And then, you know, around the corner goes David Alan Greer and... the rest, their names, I can't remember their names right now. I'm so tired, guys. But it's thoroughly enjoyable. So, like, yeah, there are moments when I really enjoy Jamie Foxx, not in this movie.
Lastly, we've got a really quick little cameo was done by Flea.
Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. You know, I'm never unhappy when Flea pops up and stuff.
No, I mean, he's been around since, I mean, ever since he was Needles in Back to the Future Part 2.
Yes.
Which
I don't know that one as much as you do. I know the first one and the third one very well.
The first and third? I've skipped the second one?
I haven't seen Back to the Future 2 in years.
Back to the Future 2 is so good. People? Come on, people. No, they don't. Like, when I was younger, people used to rag on the
third one.
The third one.
Yeah.
And then.
The third one's my favorite.
And then the younger generation, people who are younger than me, got older and started talking about movies that they liked, and they liked the third one.
Yeah.
And it's just like, but there's so many. It's such a fun movie.
I'm not saying that I wouldn't love to just do a lazy afternoon or like a lazy day trilogy watch fest of all three of them.
I know, which is why it's not going to happen anytime soon. But every time Huey Lewis's Back in Time comes on the radio at work, I immediately just want to be like, the first thing I'm thinking is like, man, I can't wait to clock out so I can go home and watch Back to the Future. But then it never happens because I'm, busy and things.
You're a busy man.
Work and podcasts and kids and family.
I love this podcast, but it has kind of ruined our ability to just watch what we want. Because when we're not watching
completely,
movies.
No. Because we watched Timeline.
Yeah. No, we did. We finally got High as Kites and watched Timeline. And let me fucking tell you guys. 3 out of 5 stars. Oscar Isaac should have replaced Paul Walker.
I think we're good.
So good.
Baby Driver's now on pause.
Yeah.
Timeline, guys.
It's so fucking stupid, but it's so fucking good. Gerald Butler has never in his life been hotter than he was in Timeline. And they know it because he is shirtless for a good amount of that film. And, like, he doesn't have, like, a ripped, like, modern bod like Chris Evans in Captain America. But he's got, like, a pretty nice physique, and it's a little dad body, and it's a little doughy. And I just love it. His chemistry with Anna Friel is 1,000 times better than Paul Walker and Frances O'Connor. They try to force Paul Walker and Frances O'Connor as a love couple so hard, and it is awkward. She's way too old for him. Like, legitimately. Like, she is at least 5 years older than him, and he's just this doe-eyed college student that's like, I'm in love with you. And she's like, oh, sweet boy. But then they go through, they, like, trauma bond, and there's no way in hell that they come out on the other side of that as a proper couple. Like, they might fuck for a little while, but it's not gonna be a good relationship. And there's also no fucking way that Paul Walker is Billy Connolly's son.
That's the craziest part. I swear... What happened with that movie was they needed a star.
Yeah.
Somebody, because...
Gerald Butler wasn't quite a star yet.
And he kind of plays like the second kind of hero in this movie.
Except he's the main hero of the story.
Overall, he is like the main guy. Yeah. This movie, Timeline, came out 3 years before 300.
Yeah.
So Gerald Butler's not even a name yet.
Yeah.
So Paul Walker is the star of this movie because...
He was young and he was cute and he was like the it guy.
He was the it guy because 2 years before Timeline, The Fast and Furious came out. So
damn.
He was...
Yeah, he was fucking...
He was hot.
He was Paul Walker.
He was the biggest star in this movie.
But
even though this movie is full of bigger stars now.
The amount of people.
Paul Walker, rest in peace.
Yeah,
who knows what his career would have been like.
I don't hate the man at all.
No, I love Paul Walker.
It's just he's not great in this movie. And it's not that he's bad. It's just his character is so bumbling from like one thing to another.
My favorite thing is when they've got all these actors who are speaking English, French, and Scottish.
Yes. In 14th century France, no less.
And everybody's as soon as one of our characters, main characters, start speaking French, they're just like, oh, Frenchman.
Yeah, oh, God, oh, my God. No.
And then,
if they're on the French side of the war and they start speaking English, they're like, oh, English.
Oh, English.
They're like, no, we're Scottish.
The Scottish guys are like, oh, you're Scottish? Okay, you're Scottish.
No, this is fine.
Paul Walker talks and everybody's just like, Oh, yeah, okay.
Like, he's got a full-blown Californian accent.
You sound normal.
He sounds like he's fucking from the nobody Californian
Nobody reacts
sketch.
To his accent at all.
And nobody's like, what? They must
They react to every other accent in the movie.
But not in an English or a fucking Californian American accent. So like, funny. Hey, guys, where's my dad? Oh, dad, I gotta come after. Like, there's no way Billy Connolly gave, you know, any part of his body to make Paul Walker. I don't buy it. And his chemistry with Frances O'Connor is non-existent. It is almost it's almost as bad as Ansel Elgort.
I was going to say, theirs is more believable than Ansel Elgort.
It's just barely.
And Lily
but
James.
Gerald Butler is so good in this film. His chemistry with Anna Friel is just, it's perfect. It is spot on gorgeous. Michael Sheen runs away with this movie. Martin Kosks, or however we say his last name, Celeborn, runs away with this movie with his terrible American accent, because he's trying to rock an American accent and a British
this
accent
Australian
at the same time.
This actor is here trying to do both English
New Zealand and, actor. Yeah, and is trying to do an English and an American accent, and it's rough. Fucking, I totally forgot that Neil McDonough was in it. And he was such a joy until he's just murdered unceremoniously. Timeline's a great movie. And the other thing, too, first of all, Ethan Embry is given nothing to do in that movie but be the source of exposition. Ethan Embry's entire job is to just be like...
Yeah, he's the audience.
He's checking in on the future side of things, right? Because they go back
in
time.
He checks in with all the professionals for the audience.
Absolutely.
Hey, professional... What's the deal with this?
Yeah.
Well, blah, 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 blah.
And then he moves on to the next expert.
Yeah. And he moves on to the next professional. Hey, professional.
What are we going to do here?
And blah, 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 blah.
Fucking David Thewlis was fighting for his life with his accent in that movie, too. But Ethan Embry, like, so he's on the side. He's on the side of the, he's in the present day, right? He's in present day, like fucking New Mexico or something. That's also where that movie partially takes place, is like New Mexico present day and 14th century France. They're the people that put together the time machine, and then the time machine gets destroyed because of course, and they only have like 6 hours to put it back together. And Ethan Embry is just there to be like, how do we put it back together? Expert in this. And what do we do now? Expert in that. And it's just ridiculous. That movie... I loved it. I loved every single second.
It's so much fun.
It was so
and so tense
much.
Towards the end.
It
like
really
there's so much
sucks
good
you
tension.
In. I know, and you're just like you're so
you
involved.
You are on the edge of your seat, and you want to know how they are going to make it through.
Yeah,
it.
And but see, the thing is you're on the edge of your seat the entire time you're in France, and then when they shoot back to New Mexico, you're like, oh yeah, these guys.
And everybody, remember, this is a Richard Donner
it's
film
a Richard
too,
and a Michael Crichton film,
and a Michael Crichton
Michael
film,
Crichton
yeah.
and Richard Donner. And Michael Crichton hated this movie so much he refused to allow any of his other films to be sold to movies until he died, and Steven Spielberg managed to get in there based on their friendship. This movie, if you have a couple of hours, don't watch Baby Driver.
Don't
bother with Baby Driver.
Skip
like
Baby Driver.
We've all seen it. It's fine. Put on Timeline. So Caveman and I both gave it 3.5 stars.
It's 3 minutes longer than Baby Driver.
So shut up. Really? Because it felt like it was a lot less.
Right.
I was
entertained. Timeline.
Timeline is a better movie.
Time moves quickly with Timeline. Baby Driver, it crawls like a baby.
It crawls like a baby. I loved... That was such a good... couple hours
it was
spent
just
with you.
Fun yeah. Kids are at school and you and I are just like
nothing to do on our day off,
hey, let's put on Timeline,
get really cranked and watch Timeline. And it was thoroughly
worth
enjoyable
it.
And Oscar Isaac should have been Paul Walker's entire character, and I believe that Oscar Isaac is more likely to be the son of Billy Connolly than Paul Walker. That's for goddamn sure. Also the weird thing where Paul Walker was like, at one point during the film, they find out that his dad, Billy Connolly, by the way, world treasure Billy Connolly, adore him to no end.
Rest in peace.
No, he's still alive.
What?
Yeah, he's still alive. He's just, he has Parkinson's, so he's out of the, he's just quietly, living his life.
I hope he lives a good life.
Yeah, but fucking Billy Connolly, check out his comedy bit on Shagging Sheep. It's amazing. Algebra fucking bro, too. His whole bit on math is hysterical, but, anyway, so they find out that Billy Connolly has been sent back in time and is stuck in back in time, right? He's gone back in time. In the modern day, they're discovering this and they don't know how it's possible. And Paul Walker's just finding out that his father is lost in 14th century France. And the first thing he does is put his hand on the shoulder of the woman that he is in love with, who does not love him, Frances O'Connor, because they've already established. And she's just like, oh, I know that you're in love with me.
Pat, young child.
Like, that's sweet. That's sweet, but I don't think so.
You're a child and I'm an adult.
Yeah. Like, literally, like, he's like 19 and she's at least 24. At least.
That's what it seems like. Yeah. I think the producers were like, that's what we're going for. Yeah.
And then, so he puts his hand on her shoulder out of comfort. Or maybe in that moment, he's like, I don't know what he needs, but he puts his hand in the shoulder in this vulnerable moment that he has. And she looks at the hand with a very much a look of like, I don't want this. And then if you watch his hand, his thumb slowly runs up and down the side of her neck in a weirdly sensual motion that is awkward and uncomfortable. It's still more believable than Lily James and Ansel Elgort. It's so much more believable. Anyways, Flea's in this movie, in Baby Driver, Flea. And he's great. We also both had a moment where we were like, Flea is in Obi-Wan Kenobi? But yeah, canonically, Flea has been in a Star Wars.
And Flea was in
Big Lebowski.
Big Lebowski, of course, is one of the nihilists.
Yeah, he was in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. He was, you know, he was one of the cops in Inside Out. Like, Flea's done everything and we love him. And then lastly, I do want to bring up C.J. Jones, who plays Joseph. The deaf adoptive father of Baby.
Oh yeah.
He hasn't done a whole lot of stuff, but one of the trivia notes about this movie was that as Edgar Wright was casting Joseph, who was written as a deaf older black man, a lot of great actors came in and auditioned for the role, but none of them were deaf until C.J. Jones came in and legitimately a deaf man, like perfectly fit the character, and Edgar Wright chose him because he fit the character the best. I thought that he was another good part of this film, Joseph. He was one of the few characters that in any way were redeeming, because he was just a good man doing his best trying to raise this boy. But I'm glad he's not killed too, because there's a moment where you're like, oh, fucking Jamie Foxx just murdered that guy, but that's not the case. You know what one of my favorite parts of this movie was? So obviously, I'm not a huge fan of this film. I think that, honestly, I don't know how much Caveman wants to talk about it, because you like this movie, and that's okay.
I do, but not really for reasons for acting or for the overall storyline.
You like the driving and you like the music.
I like the driving because the stunts are cool, yeah. And the music and everything in the music, the choreography, the way people walk, the sound effects matching up with the tempo.
The lyrics appearing in the background as graffiti. Yes. It's all very clever and very Edgar Wright.
The machine guns.
Every single gun is fired to the beat of the music.
And that's what I appreciate and love about the editing and the sound.
But it's not the best. I mean, it's not the most original film out there.
No.
You know, it's but a guy.
It was one of those, like, this is the way I view it. And it's probably not the way it happened. I feel like Edgar Wright was bummed that he couldn't do Ant-Man.
Yeah.
It was like, all right, I'm just going to make a movie.
He had Baby Driver in his back pocket for
a
while.
He did. I know. He was writing the script for a while.
Ant-Man didn't happen. So he went with something that he knew he could put together. And honestly, did a great job with, in terms of like, you know, success across Hollywood standards. It's the higher one up on this list. It's wildly successful, critically acclaimed, Oscar nominated. It wasn't like, you know, he went off to lick his wounds, but he didn't make something shitty out of it.
It's and in the moment, this movie was fine. It was a great movie to like.
It just unfortunately hasn't aged well outside of his hands.
Doesn't it suck?
Well, yeah, it does kind of suck.
Other people can just kind of put a stain on a movie that you liked.
Yeah. Though. I fucking love American Beauty. I love that film. I'll never watch it again, but I loved that movie. There are a lot of Kevin Spacey movies that I've thoroughly enjoyed that now I'm just like, God fucking damn it. Ew. And like, yeah, sure. He wasn't found guilty in court or anything, but public opinion being what it is, I'm not a fan.
You have the right to watch or not watch or read or not read.
Hell, Guy Pearce just came out and said that he was uncomfortable and there were some things that happened on the set of L.A. Confidential between him and Kevin Spacey. And then Kevin Spacey went on a Twitter rant about it, of course. But, like, you know, fucking L.A. Confidential is a great film. But now I'm going to watch that next time and be like, ew. It's unfortunate, yes, that people's bad... actors' bad habits can ruin stuff that you like. And it's hard to separate the art from the artist, for me. Sometimes I can do it, like with David Bowie. Other times I can't, with Kevin Spacey.
I think one example of something that I was able to get over and just enjoy the entertainment and not focus on the person, I think it was Tom Cruise. For a while there, it was getting sketchy, and I was just like,
couch jumping, he was too much.
He was ruining everything that I enjoyed about him.
Yeah.
And, you know, his early work. And then he did Tropic Thunder.
Yeah.
And his ability to make me laugh like that.
Yeah.
And enjoy him in a role.
It really was a change for his career.
Got me to be like, okay, and then...
But he wasn't a sexual abuser, allegedly.
No, and that's the other part. He's just weird.
He's just fucking weird.
He's done wrong.
No, he's
which
just
is
bonkers.
Which is forgivable.
Yeah, and now he wants to die on camera, and we all know it, and we're all going to be complicit when it happens.
We're all
going to go fucking see that movie.
It's going to be
Tom Cruise's final film.
The meme is going to be the scene from Midsommar where they jump off the cliff, and people are just like.
Yeah,
like
clapping.
Praising and clapping and being like, good job.
Outside of his middle tooth and his own insanity and that whack-jawed religion, quote-unquote. Don't sue a Scientology.
Allegedly
wacky religion. Where are Sharon Musgraves? Anyways, outside of that, he's not a bad person, per se. He actually is a fairly decent person from all things. But he was too much, and
he was too much. But then,
you know, somebody comes along and is like, Kevin Spacey has done a lot of inappropriate things with underage boys, and he can't come back from that. Allegedly. You can't come back from that. Not for me, at least. And so, yeah, like, there is a different version where Maggie loves this movie and is super into it, but it's not a, you know, 2025 version of Maggie. I will say, though, one of the few things that I thoroughly enjoyed about this film was Paul Williams popping up.
Yeah. He's unexpected. Of all the other characters that pop up in this.
Paul Williams, famous musician. He wrote so many great songs for the Muppets.
Great songs.
He's got a really wonderful song off of Tron's Random Access Memories. You know,
beautiful. Everything
he
does.
He wrote The Rainbow Connection, guys. Like, if that's the only thing he did, that's enough. But he has done so much more in his life. And check out Paul Williams. He was in fucking Smokey the Bandit. In every scene he's in, he steals. And so, yeah, I was really happy to see Paul Williams. The choreography of this movie is spectacular. I will give it that. The stunt driving is insane. That opening sequence where they are trying to get away, you know, they're getting away from the police after the bank robbery is perfect. I understand, I guess, the good parts of this film, and I understand why you like it. I don't. For the two movies that we had to watch for the podcast, I didn't enjoy this, and I didn't enjoy the one after. Spoilers. although, for wildly different reasons. It's a good movie, but I just made me so... Anyways, we'll get to that next week, folks. But so watching those two movies, I wasn't the happiest human being on planet Earth. I was very much just like... Bleh. But then we watched Timeline. And fuck it was Timeline not. The next day when we got up and the kids went to school and we had our breakfast sandwiches and our coffee and our weed. And we got to just sit back and watch a dumb fucking movie for the fun of it. That was great. And sometimes, I'm not saying anything bad about this show. I love doing the show with you so much. I've said it has changed the way that I see myself as a movie fan. I love being introduced to these movies with you and because of you. Like, I love doing this show with you so much. But that weekend, I had more fun watching Timeline with you
than the two movies that we're doing.
Than the two movies that we had.
The two movies that we, I mean, Baby Driver and next week's are
The Social Network, guys.
Yeah, it's Social Network.
Yeah,
David Fincher.
That's gonna be a fun conversation. But like, I had more fun watching Timeline, and I would, of the three of them, I would go watch Timeline right now.
Agree.
Yeah.
So Maggie, that leads us right into
it.
What would you give Baby Driver out of 5 stars?
Oh, boy. I am going to give it a 2.
Wow.
It's somewhere between a 2 and a 2.5, but I just, there's not a whole lot of it that makes me want to give it that extra half star. So I give it a 2. It is not my cup of tea. Half the cast is problematic or just bad in their roles. And... yeah, it's not Hot Fuzz.
It's not Hot Fuzz.
What about you, my love?
3.5.
Okay. I kind of expected you to like this a lot more, but I'm kind of glad you didn't.
I think if you were to ask me in like 2020,
yeah,
2019, you know,
yeah,
not long after the movie came out, or at least before Kevin Spacey's allegations mm-hmm. began, I probably would have said 5.
Yeah.
And not only do you have that, but, you know, put Kevin Spacey and Ansel Elgort to the side.
Mm-hmm.
Rewatching this, I did, it's blaringly obvious how much Ansel Elgort and Lily James' chemistry does not work.
It's so bad.
I don't like Ansel Elgort's acting.
No, I didn't find his character in any way sympathetic or, I did not care about any of the characters outside of Joseph and Deborah. And Paul Williams, who got killed.
Yeah.
Yeah, the rest of them are just awful, shitty people.
I agree with all that.
Yeah.
I still enjoy the art that Edgar Wright created.
Yes.
The idea, the kind of gimmick
mm-hmm.
of doing the whole movie to a beat or making the movie follow a beat, I thought was very creative.
It's a very modern musical. It's a action musical. Without people singing,
but
it's still a musical.
To be able to pull that off and sync it up and mm-hmm. do all that had to have been painstakingly.
It took a great talent to do it.
I think Edgar Wright, because he loves this kind of thing.
Yeah,
I think this was a kind of a passion project for him. You know, I still will watch anything that he
does.
Makes.
Yeah. But would you like to just go make dinner and watch Hot Fuzz?
You know, let's go make dinner and watch Hot Fuzz.
For the greater good.
The greater good.
So, Maggie.
Yes, K-Man.
I have 2 questions for you.
Hit it!
Just 1 week ago, everything was so different. Even the word everything meant something else entirely.
What the fuck? He sounds so young there. He sounds so young there. Wait, play that again.
Just 1 week ago, everything was so different. Even the word everything meant something else entirely.
Are you sure that's not Elijah Wood?
It. You know what? When I was re-listening to it, as I was putting that clip in, the audio clip in, I was like,
Frodo?
I was like, that does sound a lot like Elijah Wood. This is a short film that came out in 2016 called Lightning Face.
I think I've seen that.
It's free on YouTube to watch. I kind of like fast forwarded through it and kind of watched like
the
progression of it
where he's in the, in the study, talking to that other person and eats the donuts. Right. Cause that's a great little short film.
No, this one is, he essentially gets struck in the face with lightning
mm-hmm.
or by lightning.
Lucky lightning.
And then he just starts, because of the scar that it leaves on his face.
Still hot.
I'm sure he is. he kind of like becomes a introvert, shut in.
Yeah.
And starts hearing voices. And he imagines a one-eyed monkey is telling him things to do.
God,
and
no, I don't
kind of goes out. Insane. But it actually looked like, and it's only 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
And, I might end up.
Let's give it a
just
shot.
Watching through
that.
So Maggie,
yes,
first question.
Uh-huh.
Would Baby Driver have been a better film?
Yes.
if Oscar Isaac was in it.
Of course. I would have enjoyed it.
Well, then that leads us to the second question. Mm-hmm. Which character would you have had Oscar Isaac play?
I would have liked Oscar Isaac to play a young... by the way, all in the same movie.
Okay.
A young Oscar Isaac being baby.
Okay.
A older, gruffer, kind of modern Oscar Isaac playing Doc, the Kevin Spacey role.
Sure.
And a, you know, somewhat younger, tattooed up, like, grifter Oscar Isaac playing Bats. So okay. Replace Ansel Elgort, Kevin Spacey, and Jamie Foxx completely with Oscar Isaac. This movie gets 5 stars. He would have better chemistry with Lily James. He would have better chemistry with everybody in this movie, honestly. And that's the movie that I want to watch, is him across the board in all three of those roles. Because I'm full for, you know, replacing every Kevin Spacey in all of his movies. I want him to be replaced by either Christopher Plummer or Oscar Isaac, no matter what the role is, no matter what the ages of those two actors at the time. Just put him back in there.
Oh, my God. I would love to watch Oscar Isaac in Beyond the Sea.
Yeah, he would have been great.
I would love to listen to him sing all those.
Why has he not done a musical? Oscar, baby.
Oscar,
why have you not done a musical?
Come on, baby.
You're playing Jesus, for Christ's sakes. Why have you not done a musical? Hey, caveman.
Yeah.
Do you know what I would name an ostrich if I had one?
No, Maggie. What would you name that ostrich?
Ostrich Isaac. And that has been this week's episode of Movie Mingle on Baby Driver and Timeline, and that we hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed watching Timeline and bringing it to you. Next week, we have coming up Social Network, not The Social Network, just Social Network, a movie that I had never seen up until a few days ago, and I have thoughts on, so many thoughts, especially because, you know, maybe if I'd seen this movie back when it came out, my thoughts would have been different, but now, so do join us next Wednesday for that. Until then, you can find us on Letterboxd, Instagram, and Threads at Movie Mingle Pod. You can find us on YouTube at Movie Mingle Podcast, and write us any of your thoughts, comments, questions, and concerns and theories about how Timeline could have been a better film. By the way, it couldn't have been. It's perfect. At MovieMinglePod@gmail.com. Feel free to rate us 5 stars or whatever you feel that we deserve on your podcast platform of choice. We're plugging away with this little show. We're having the time of our lives doing it, and we appreciate all of our listeners. Thank you so much for taking the time and spending it with us. You guys are great. Until next time, take good care of yourselves out there in this crazy wide world. Make your own soundtrack as you go, because it's important, and go watch Timeline. But until then, go mingle. Bye!
Are you an effective team?
We are an effective team.
Let them fight.
How did you just do that?
I'm a really good lawyer.
Here on Caladan, we've ruled by air power and sea power. On Arrakis, we need to cultivate desert power.
Welcome, Mr. Beach.
What's that bar? I'm a little confused.
Well, we wouldn't want that, would we?
I don't want to brag, but I will. I was in the Avengers.
The Avengers?
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you. What is that?
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Toga. 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 Toga.